Thanks for listening to the Replatform podcast, sponsored by Crown Peak and Elastic Path and hosted by me, James Gerd. Thanks for tuning in. As always, we put a lot of time and effort into creating content and bringing interesting guests and lots of new technology news. Help us keep the podcast free for everybody. Refer us to people in your network. Tell people about the podcast so we can get more listeners. Share our social posts. LinkedIn is really popular. And then also the best thing you do is give us a rating on Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you might be listening or watching. So let me set up the latest episode and I'll introduce you to our guest. Our topic is how retailers are using Voyado's marketing automation platform. We're going to focus into one specific area of the platform because it's got a lot of capability. And we want to be focused today. And also they have got a lot of really interesting brands on the roster, including one of my favorite ever children's brands, which is Polana Barrett's clothing brand, where I've spent a lot of money over the years. So we're going to cover their Engage product offering, look at how retailers are using marketing automation, how leading brands are getting into things like personalization, and understand their loyalty offering. So a warm welcome to Carl Stone, who is the regional VP for UK and Ireland. Hi, Carl. How are you doing?
Hi, James. Yeah, very good. Thanks. Very good.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time to join us. So before I start asking lots of annoying questions, do you want to introduce yourself, let people know who you are, what you do, and give people a bit of a flavour for Voyado for those who haven't worked with it or come across it?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm Carl Stone. I'm the regional VP for Voyado in the UK and Ireland. UK and Ireland's a growth expansion market for us. We're from Sweden originally. We've been around in our current form for about 11 years. And in Sweden, everyone knows who we are. We're the largest kind of marketing automation provider in the region. So Voyado is a customer experience platform. We're in a kind of segment where there's lots of different acronyms for what we do, but easiest to describe what we actually do. So we cover kind of traditional ESP marketing automation type functionality. We've got a loyalty management component to that as well. We also integrate with POS systems as well for omnichannel retailers.
Excellent, thanks. Yeah, our industry loves acronyms, doesn't it? It's brilliant. But then everyone needs to put things into boxes to make life simpler and feel happy. So excellent. So let's go. We're going to explore the Engage products. I know that Voyado's got other products in there, but I'm really interested in the multi-channel marketing and loyalty piece. So let's start with who you service and who this product's for. Like, what type of size business is your sweet spot? And can you give us some other examples of well-known brands? And maybe, there's obviously brands like Polana Perrett from your heartland in Sweden, but some other brands from like the UK and Ireland would be really useful.
Yeah, sure. So we only work with retailers and we're completely focused on retail, and we've built the platform to support retailers. So understanding retail use cases and, the day-to-day measures and interactions that a retailer has with their customers. We work with kind of medium to large retailers, and defining that by turnover doesn't really work too well, actually, because you get some really kind of old school large retailers that have really limited online experience and capability. So what I always say is if someone's got about 100K visits per month on their website, they're probably big enough for us. Lower than that, they probably need to build a bit bigger audience before we can really help get them some good value. There's not really a top end on the size that we work with. Don't work with too many kind of like large American global type businesses, but we work with some pretty big ones on some of our other products.
Yeah, it's always interesting. They're trying to define business sizes by revenue turnover because that doesn't always work well. I find this in the replatforming space, and often I define enterprise by technical infrastructure and capability, not necessarily by revenue. Because some fast growth DTC brands, for example, are enterprise in revenue, but not necessarily in their wider tech stack. Excellent. So who can you give us? Who's the biggest UK and I customer in terms of whether it's size of business or usage of the platform?
Yeah, so we just went live a few days ago with Jigsaw. So they're really, really lovely brand. They're pretty big. So they're certainly a good user. We've got lots of exciting plans with them coming up. Also just currently implementing with Bellstaff. So they're, again, pretty big. If you're in Ireland much and you like getting your hair done, I do. Peter Mark hair. They're massive. Again, very, very nice kind of heritage brand.
Are you just gloating because I don't have much hair anymore? That's just unfair on a Friday. Okay, so that's given us a good flavour of the type of... Yeah, I think a lot of people will be able to understand the jigsaw piece as well. I imagine there's quite a few people who's probably shopped there. So let's get into the multi-channel marketing bit. This is a space I find really interesting because you go back several years, SMS was huge in the US, but not so much in the UK, but that's changed massively. Mm. I know that's one of the key areas of product. So can you just give us the market context first? Like, how quickly are you seeing SMS usage grow? And are you seeing this very significantly across different like verticals or sectors?
Yeah, definitely. It's coming on. And I'd say that every retailer we talk to, it's a discussion point. Probably around coming on board, about 50% will be implementing from the start, and most will have a plan to implement some level of SMS, over the next 12 months. Their use of it varies quite a lot, but it's certainly kind of growing, and I think it's an exciting channel.
How many of them are using it purely from like service notifications versus actually proactive marketing and more customized? Comms like we'll come to the loyalty bit later, but are you seeing it being used more and more in terms of like loyalty VIP programs, or is it still very kind of transactional order based?
So it definitely starts out service for most brands. I think with channels, it's really important to think about what the strengths of the channel are. So with SMS, you value the immediacy of SMS, and the interaction rate is very, very high with SMS, so it does suit service messages really well, and people are more retailers are more cautious about where they'll use it for kind of driving sales. So when they find a good way of kind of driving revenue with sales, they're more likely to adopt it. But I think that's more considered because they want to kind of protect the brand reputation. So I'd say everyone's kind of starting out with service. With loyalty, it's quite interesting because where you introduce loyalty as a service benefit, and so it might be that for some brands, getting a phone number is a good unique ID because it's quicker to give than trying to someone at the till trying to spell out their email address, say. So it might be that it's part of the sign up process. Is, hey, give me your phone number, we'll drop you a link, and you can complete the sign up through the link on your SMS. So it's definitely interesting use cases there.
Crown Peak, enabling organizations to build meaningful digital experiences for everyone, everywhere. Engage your customers with our content management system. Reach your entire audience with our digital accessibility and quality tools. And grow your brand with our product discovery solution. Find out more at crownpeak.com.
And something that I know several, lots of my clients on the marketing side are looking for is a platform that can intelligently... like optimize and decide, which channel's most effective for different customers based on, open rates, response rate. Mm. Can you talk us through this part of Voyado platform? Does the platform have like the machine to automatically decide that, hey, this customer will only open this type of communication by SMS, let's not send it by email? Or is that something that the business programmatically sets up within the platform?
Yeah, you tend more to set it up programmatically, but my take on it really is that I would think about the purpose of the message and then what's the appropriate channel. Again, coming back to the use of SMS, it's quite immediate and it's quite interruptive. So for some things, it's a great channel. For others, if there's a more nuanced message, or if you're trying to communicate brand value or something like that, the message is better suited to email. So rather than what's going to get the highest open rate, I think it's thinking about the purpose of the message is really important. There are definitely some messages that you could send on either or both. I mean, both often works quite well as well. I think about the purpose of the message is a really important consideration. The other side of it is the financial consideration, because there's a cost of acquisition. So SMS is a more expensive channel. It converts really well, but you're going to be making a slightly different kind of incremental calculation about what the value and the cost of doing that campaign is. So,
Yeah. Do you see anybody? You mentioned about using the two in parallel, which obviously makes perfect sense. And I've seen some do that really well in specific customer segments, especially around things like VIP, where it might be reminding people of exclusive offers that they're going to miss out on if they don't act after they've sent out an email. Do you see people starting to put those two bits together more now, where they might have a main campaign that goes out by email, but they're using SMS tactically to follow up and drive overall response rates?
Yeah, definitely. It's interesting. It seems like whenever you couple them, that they both perform better. And if there's any kind of, limited either time or availability on something, it's going to inspire that more kind of immediate response. So if you're more of a value brand, having a discount or something available for a limited time is a really good way of driving impact. But then if you're a more kind of premium luxury brand, you might not want to drive the kind of limited time kind of offers vibe, but you might have limited availability, or it's a new drop, or selling out fast or something like that. And again, it's going to inspire the quicker action, either maybe as a follow up to an email, or just as a standalone campaign.
Yeah, that makes sense. And let's talk about, you have a promotions engine as well. And promotions is an area that every single e-com platform evaluation I do with clients always becomes a detailed area where people want to have lots of different flexibility in the types of promotions, and inevitably getting towards personalized promotions, generating unique promo codes per customer rather than one bulk code that goes out to everybody. And I know that you've got that capability to generate unique codes. The question I've got is, how does that play with e-com platforms? Because people could be on Shopify, Adobe, Salesforce, BigCommerce, and obviously those codes have got to work and apply. So what is the journey that a customer has, or a merchant has, from generating codes with you to those codes being eligible for redemption?
So it's pretty clever, actually. We don't mind where the code's generated. So we could generate it, or the e-com platform could generate it. But what we do is we never expose the code to the customer. So what happens is we integrate with the e-commerce platform's till page, and we integrate with the point of sale solution, so that an offer or a promotion is visible, but the code's all in the back end. So it's just whatever the value is, maybe 10%, maybe it's a fixed currency amount. Either in the checkout page or on the POS, and it's just, do you want to redeem it? And the person just hits yes, and all the code stuff is done at the back end. So if you're using Shopify, say, you could use their unique codes. You could use generic codes, because the customer's never going to see it, so they couldn't share it. Does that make sense?
It confused people a little bit. Well, I think the key question I've got is, if you set up your codes in a third party system, the e-commerce has got to know about that to be able to accept it in the shopping basket. Otherwise, it's a code that the e-commerce doesn't know about and goes, no. So are you saying that there's an integration piece that you do with the e-com platform, so that the e-com platform is able to import and recognize and have those codes set up then ready so that they can be?
Yeah, exactly. So the e-commerce platform will always need to do the logic of the code, because that's where the transaction's taking place. Same with the POS. But how the code's generated or shared varies from customer to customer, and we do a bit of a technical deep dive to figure out what's going to be the smoothest for the implementation.
And which platforms have you got existing integrations with then? What are the key ones that are already set up to work?
Yeah, good question. So Shopify, so we've got a few merchants live on that. Magento, Salesforce, BigCommerce. Got a couple of implementations of commerce tools, where that's more of kind of an accelerator. And then a whole host of Swedish ones that people in the UK probably wouldn't have heard.
Centra?
So, yes, Centra. In fact, people in the UK would have heard of Centra definitely now, because they're doing great things. So got some really good shared customers with them.
Ah, interesting. That was almost like a mini tour of the Gartner quadrants going through the main platforms. I'm not surprised. And have you, so have you got any apps and connectors built for these platforms then? Or is it, so if somebody came to you new and said, hey, look, actually I'm on BigCommerce and I want to use Voyado, do they have to do a custom integration, or is there already an app or a connector ready for them?
Yeah, no, there's connectors for all the ones we mentioned, yeah.
Fantastic. That helps.
And then, yeah, in some cases, we'll kind of extend on that. But.
Excellent. And let's move on to personalization. I love the word personalization because it means so many things to different people. Yeah. How are you, from your product offering point of view, how are you defining personalization? As in, what does it enable merchants to do that's truly personalized rather than just, say, big segment-based?
So there's a lot of possibility there. And I always talk about kind of personalization and relevance of, like, I really encourage people to open it up and see what it means to them and to their brand. So typically people will be thinking about, like, content and what in retail, what products somebody's interested in, right? That's kind of the immediate kind of thought and where people tend to go with it to start with. But I think timing is really important. I think considering where somebody is within the purchase journey. So we've got a really lovely brand called Love Stories. They're a Dutch ladies' underwear brand. They're one of those brands. It's you know, they're by women for women. We've all experienced uncomfortable underwear, but they really want to make sure that women who want to feel their best and look their best at the same time kind of have access to that. That they just have a real focus on changing the tonality of their communication, depending on where someone is through the purchase cycle. And it's beautifully done because it's so subtle, but they really execute very well on that. I think that's a good example. But other kinds of personalization that aren't necessarily exposed to the customer particularly is thinking about things like price point. So because we manage the segments and we manage the discount codes and all of that kind of stuff, we can start to see what price point someone's going to shop at. And so you kind of, thinking about, like, okay, what level do we need to nudge this person over, and do we even need to give them a discount to nudge them over? And if we don't, we can avoid it. So that's important. There's you can get pretty subtle with it, and we really want to make sure that's one to one. Another interesting one. So we were talking about SMS and how you have, like, sales messages that you know, kind of feel personal. Bjorn Borg do a really nice thing with it. They'll send SMS and it'll come from a sales rep at the local store, or the store that somebody normally shops at. So that kind of just puts a personal touch on it and makes it feel much more okay to be sending a sale-based SMS.
Elastic Path is on a mission to break through the barriers that prevent commerce leaders from delivering extraordinary shopping experiences. Both business and tech teams are able to innovate on their own terms, fully embrace composability, and in turn, never compromise on what's possible. Learn more at www.elasticpath.com.
Yeah, I like that example because a lot of personalization ends up just being pure product driven. Which is fine, but I would argue that's not full proper personalization. It's just personalized product recs, which is a subset of having a personalized experience. So yeah, the ability to connect humans and users. I've seen a few premium retailers do that really nicely. Neiman Marcus is one of the early ones who did it through their app, where you could connect with in-store sales assistants and have proper communication. So that's a really nice example. And in terms of, so email marketing is a bit where most people start and focus on personalization of trying to get tailored content, usually by segment, but then also product level personalized. How does Voyado play with e-com platforms to get, you know, purchase history, browse history? What sort of level of data are you bringing in to help drive those recommendations?
Yeah, so there's a couple of levels to that. So we get purchase history, of course, it's really important. We get the basket contents, that kind of thing. Something we do because we're purely focused on retail, we understand how a web page works for retailers. So if someone goes onto a PDP, we know it's a PDP, like it's about that product as opposed to it being a generic web page. So it's easy for us to identify that someone's interested in that product because of the type of page they've gone on. Whereas if an ESP marketing automation platform is more broad, they work with travel, hospitality, that kind of thing, they're thinking more about web pages. And so it gets harder to personalize around the product. But we're detecting when someone's looking at products, and then based on the interaction with different products, we'll start to rank the top 10 products that someone has interacted with based on whether they've looked at the page, whether they've added to their basket, you know, whether the dwell time, all of that kind of stuff. And then, you know, that ranking will influence what the recs are included. We also have a search and product recs product that can take that to another level based on like the audience they're in, based on timing, trends on the site separately that might influence that kind of stuff as well.
And does it have, because I haven't looked at this specific part of the platform before, does the ESP part have like the flow base, the ability to set up like if this, then that, and to change the flow people get pushed into based on behavior? Excellent. Because there's a use case that always blows my mind. People don't use it enough around browser abandonment, where, coming back to your point about the PDP, you could have a considered purchase where it will take 3, 4, 5 visits before anyone's ready to commit. And if you instantly hit them with a, here you go, you don't forget this product, or here's 10% off, it's too early in the journey. So do you get that level of data to know how many times someone visited a page, so you can have a flow that said, after they visited for the third time, now push them into this flow then?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes, they definitely do. I'm trying to think, it's always interesting to remember in which case studies have said we can talk specifically about it. But yes, definitely some customers do that.
That's interesting, because in my experience, very few do browse, and everyone does basket abandonment. That seems to be the default behavior. Yeah. Basket abandonment obviously converts more because people are at the cart stage, but actually browse is very good at driving revenue over the long term.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting thinking about the messaging as well, though, because, okay, you've put this in your cart. That's an action you've completed. People are used to getting a specific message to say, hey, we've observed that behavior. The messaging around abandon browse can be a bit more subtle, maybe. It's like, hey, look, we've been watching what you've been doing on the site versus are these products still of interest? You know, that kind of thing is a nice way of doing it. And again, doing it based on the broader interaction kind of tends to make a lot of sense there.
Yeah, I ran a campaign a good few years back when I was working for Sage. We did a nice one around accountancy software where the browser banner was a trigger for a customer service problem. So, like, do you want to speak with one of our product experts to give you advice? And within that prompt was a video, like a short 1 minute video, which is an advice one linked to the product. The conversion on that compared with standard browser abandonment was about 3-4 times. So I think it's an untapped thing, browser abandonment. But you're right, it can't be, hey, we're watching, you've been here twice. That's a little bit Big Brother creepy. Yeah. So let's move on to the loyalty. This is a bit I really like to push into in a bit more detail. Because my Voyado's positioning is that loyalty is built on decades of expertise in retail. So I'd love to hear from your point of view some insights on like what loyalty mechanisms are currently working the best to drive, whether that's customer retention, lifetime value.
Yeah. So the first thing we do is to look at the brand, actually, because there's different mechanisms that are going to suit different people. So I do a session where we walk through kind of loyalty mechanisms, how it works, and broader loyalty strategy, and how that relates to a brand's values. So in every brand, there's a spectrum to value, like whether it's a discount brand, up to, you know, where it's all about kind of the brand and affinity with that brand, and figuring out where everyone is on that spectrum is important. And then figuring out the kind of mechanisms that make sense. What it should do, a little plug. I'm actually doing a presentation on that at the Ecom Expo. I hope that's okay to say on the 28th at 10 a.m. But so we'll look at what mechanisms will work for a particular brand. So the three kind of main themes in loyalty, you've got like real value, like right here, right now type benefits. You've got exclusivity, like make me feel special. So, you know, access to things, that kind of thing. And then you've got fun, basically. So that's where you kind of get gamification. So for the value stuff, like points, you know, quite a transactional approach to points. It makes sense. If you work out the right amount of points to drive the right kind of behavior and what that value exchange can be and what makes financial sense, what's going to get the results, points is great. If you're talking more exclusivity and kind of brand affinity, tiers works really well, because then it's like, do you get early access to sales? Do you get access to exclusive events? That kind of thing. And you can be really, really creative with the benefits of tiers. And then with gamification, there's loads of stuff you could do, like achievements, that kind of thing. Like, you can have kind of more community-based stuff. But what we really encourage is to think about those different mechanisms. You don't have to pick one or the other. One could drive the other. And then think about how you're going to make that then unique to the brand, and what opportunities does a brand have? Does it have a nice space it can run things in? Does it have amazing designers people would love to speak to, or, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And I'm definitely seeing a shift in focus away from just relying on basic points pounds to a lot of brands looking at how do we reward people with something exclusive, something of value, whether that's free content, exclusive content, early access is a good one to products, events. A lot of premium brands do it around. They'll do events in the physical world. But outside of the point space, which obviously still ends up underpinning a lot, what are you seeing the most activity on? So are people focused on generating like free stuff for people, giving away prizes? Like what are your merchants mainly selecting at the moment?
It does vary from merchant to merchant. I think access is the one we're seeing the most growth in. I think a lot of people have done points, and a lot of people, it makes sense for points, a lot of people have done that. We're seeing a lot of growth in access based on tiers. The other one we're seeing more of is kind of around achievements. So working through kind of a value exchange of maybe passing on some data, or maybe giving a review, that kind of thing. And then there being either a reward for completing a certain amount of achievements, or a progression in tiers based on completing a certain amount of achievements, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does actually. I've seen that in a few cases where things like leaving product reviews, because we all know that product reviews can increase social validation, which can drive conversion rate if they're done properly and not just spammy. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. So you encourage people to take positive steps that reinforce your brand values or help you in other ways, and you reward them for it. Yeah, that's a nice way of doing it. And how does you have membership programs as well, if I understand correctly, do you support that as a model? Can you talk people through what's available out of the box, and like give us an example of like give us the exact merchant, but like, you know, whether it's in fashion or beauty, like who's doing this well?
Yeah, I mean, there's different approaches to it. One that I love is Nudie Jeans. So what Nudie Jeans is built around sustainability. They said they want to build a sustainable brand from day one. So their whole business ethos, sourcing. In fact, they're a shared customer of Centra. And one of the things that allows them to do is to ship from store. So they always calculate what's the nearest store, so they're like CO2 and whatever from shipping is minimized. But what they said was if you register your purchase, you become a member. So now you're a Nudie member and you get free repairs for life on your jeans. So, you know, jeans aren't cheap, but if you wear those jeans for the next 20 years, then they're really cheap. You know, and you can get those repairs. All of their stores are repair shops. So you can take those in, you can get them repaired. And if you decide, okay, maybe I don't like this style anymore, then you can return them for a pretty decent discount on your next pair of jeans. And that works really nicely, because even if you buy your jeans from someone else, you can still register the jeans and still become a member. So That one I love because it's built around a shared value between the brand and the customer. And that kind of resonance really makes a difference. Like, people love to say that loyalty's dead, but it's like if there is an alignment there in values, then someone's going to be more loyal for sure. And their, you know, their retention rate's really high. I think 47% of their customers are returning customers, which is a really high number. So that, you know, it really saves them money on generating new customers on acquisition.
Yeah, it's a lovely brand example. Actually, they're doing very, very well. Having really clear brand values and something that you believe in beyond just selling and making money, it is such a point of differentiation. It's the environmental bit is really important. There's a lot of brands who've grown up with stronger green ethoses. But there's some nice examples even going way back years ago to like Ray in the US that spun out a community off the back of trying to galvanize people around doing grassroots events and meetups, and so nurturing the people to do what they want and supporting it, and therefore building a community and a membership base off that, which obviously opens up massive merchandising opportunities. So yeah, that's a really nice example. And how well integrated is the loyalty membership side with other parts of Engage, like, you know, your email marketing automation and SMS? So my assumption is it is all connected, and that you can basically take data points from what people are doing in loyalty membership and push them into campaign flows. But could you talk people through how that works and maybe give a couple of examples?
Yeah, I think that's the thing that's probably the most unique. As far as I know, no one else is as integrated here. So other platforms, I think, have bought a loyalty solution and bolted it on, and then what you'll have is some kind of points mechanism, and then you'll transfer the data field. For us, it's actually the same thing. So we've had presentations where someone said, "Can we see the loyalty bit now?" And you're like, "We've been looking at it. It's all integral to the same thing." So you mentioned kind of the journey builders, that kind of approach earlier. So the thing that's really interesting is because loyalty, the points, whether somebody's in a segment or a tier or whatever, is so integral to the customer record. The loyalty journey could influence the customer journey. So what points somebody has, or what tier they're in, or what achievements they've got so far, could influence the decision making, like where we send someone, or it could be the other way around. So what's going on with that interaction could then lift up the points, or it could lift up the tier, or whatever. So it's so well ingrained that there's no separation between the two, which is really nice. From the user perspective, our users really, really value that, because they don't have to log into two different systems and think about what data points they want to do. But on the other hand, everything is just available, so they can start experimenting. There's a really nice Danish brand called By Marlenberger. They're quite a premium luxury brand. Everyone who's kind of in the know in fashion in the UK loves hearing about them. But they do a really nice thing where you sign up and you become a member. And then there's a bunch of benefits to being a member, but they're not a brand that really wants to push discount. They really wanted to avoid discount. But at the same time, they've got the same pressures as everybody else. They need some conversion. So after becoming a member, within a certain time frame, if somebody had or hadn't interacted, they might send a benefit reminder that just says, this is the benefit of being one of our members, or they might send a discount code. The thing that's really interesting is the customer lifetime value for the people that get the benefit reminder is 66% higher than the ones where they push the discount. So they've got those people coming in that are looking for a bargain. They sign up because they're trying to get a bargain, and they've got commercial pressures. They're going to try and get a conversion there. But they know that the benefit reminder, talking about why you want to be a member, why you want to have this brand affinity, is the thing that drives the long-term value. And they're able to do stuff like that because it's all together. You know, a segment and a membership group is the same thing. And when they talk as a business about their premium customers, that is a language that the whole business is using. It's not a corner of the retail team. It's not a corner of the e-commerce team or someone in CRM. Mm. that is as a business how they talk about their different customer subsets.
Yeah, nice. And you've mentioned Nudie as an example of like the loyalty and the membership piece that you like. Have you got another example? Like, what is that your favorite merchant example of using Voyado from that loyalty membership piece, or is there something else that you can give where you think, oh, this is a lovely example of how you can make the most of our platform?
Yeah, I think the Nudie one is the one that resonates me with me the most because it's kind of creative. It's not using the traditional models at all, really. It's just all about them being them and about kind of being part of the same thing. So I like their approach, but on the same token, I think the Buy Marlene Burger one is a really good one because they're really understanding their customers in a way that says like these are the really valuable customers, right? Because we understand that customer lifetime value, and we understand their shopping habits. So because of those subsets, when someone goes into a store, then you know you can the store team can see the labels that we apply to a customer and know that this person is a bargain hunter versus this person has affinity with certain brands or certain styles and that kind of thing. So I think it's a nice contrast in the different approaches you can take with it.
And anybody who's listening, if they think, actually, some of this sounds interesting, but I want to understand how it could work to the specific model I'm looking for, how do they reach out and how can they probe further from a technical and an implementation point of view?
Yeah, sure. So there's signups on the website to do a session with us to run through kind of the loyalty discovery. So we'll have a kind of a landing page for that. You can sign up and we can run through one of those sessions. So it's based on availability, of course. But if we have a time, we'll have to take a look at a brand and see how we can help. We're going to do regular sessions around for kind of webinars about more broadly how these mechanisms work together. So there'll be signups for that on the website as well.
Excellent. Well, look, Carl, really enjoyed it. Enjoyed the examples you shared as well, and it's good to see Voyado expand in UK and I as well from its Swedish heritage. And thanks everyone who's listened. If you do have any questions, do reach out. But keep an ear open for our next episode. We drop one every week. And don't forget to give us that rating wherever you're listening or watching. Thanks very much. Until next week, everybody. For more information on this topic, head over to replatform.fm for our audio podcasts. To discuss a project, or if you'd like to chat about any of the topics covered in this episode in more detail, please reach out to myself, James Gird, or my co-host, Paul Rogers, via LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks again for listening, and keep your ears peeled for the next episode.